today's topic is called Finding Your Way. Now, the reason this topic was chosen was because there's been quite some discussion about it, about what it means to live your own life. Now, sometimes people think that living your own life refers to some kind of completely independent form of living that is devoid of any influence from others. But I don't agree with that. Other people say that the best way to live life is to be completely under the control of and the direction of higher authorities such as a guru or other spiritual personalities. I don't agree with that completely either. I think that life is something that you can live using any and all help, assistance, guidance that you can find and that you find useful for accomplishing what you wish to accomplish. I'll give you the example from my own particular life. I know what I want to do. I like to do things which help people. I like to be part of an interactive process whereby people advance and develop and everybody develops prosperity and health and happiness. I like that. I like it when everything gradually points towards spiritual evolution and people become enlivened and they become more and more aware of spiritual contact and how to connect with the spiritual divine beings, which actually are the most important personalities in at least my life, and I suppose others too. So I know what I like to do. And the problem is how to get from what I like to do to actually doing it in a way which actually works best for me and for the others. Now, I know that my capacity to figure out what to do and understand how to do it is limited by my motivation and by my seeing the relevance of what it is that I'm doing. If I'm not motivated to do what I do, I cannot do it. For example, music. If I don't have any motivation to make music, I will not do it. If I don't have motivation to actually do something of value for others, in other words, if I don't feel that there was a purpose to it, a benefit to it, something really significant, I just don't feel like doing it. In other words, I'm a person who's motivated by seeing the relevance of something, by seeing the practical capacity of something to manifest in a real way. Yet there is another motivating factor which is far more powerful in my particular life. And that is when I feel the guidance of Radha and Krishna. When I feel the guidance of Radha Krishna manifesting through all of the guidance that comes from the divine realms, the divine beings. We have talked a lot in the past about angel energy, angel guidance, guides, our own particular guides, and the guidance we get from our guides, from the guidance we can get from connecting to the devas, by connecting to the divine. We've talked about this. Yet, at the same time, when we really feel that our lives are being directed by them, we can become very motivated. At least that's how I feel. And therefore, I ask for their guidance. And when I ask for their guidance, I ask for it in a very real way. I ask, please show me the directions I should take. Stop me by various means if I'm moving in a direction I should not take. And make things clear and obvious so that even if I'm dull, it'll be very clear what to do. And when I feel that guidance actually manifesting, when I can really experience it manifesting, when I see the signs of it manifesting, I become enlivened. I wake up. My motivation wakes up. Now, how many people in this world have a similar experience of not feeling motivated when they come in contact with activities which don't really capture their heart or inspire them or make them feel like they're really, there's a meaning to it. There's a meaning to life. Many people try to find meaning by living somebody else's life. People try to find meaning by being somebody else, or by living somebody else's dream, or by accepting somebody else's motivations. Yet many times they find out later on, when it's too late, that the motivations or the dreams they are following were created by yet another person who was exploiting the circumstance for their own benefit and their own motivation. Often we have seen people engaging in very intense money-making activities in the media fields, for instance, as journalists or as TV producers or as stars in the music realm or whatever, in order to develop fame and position to make a lot of money, which they think will be their motivation and reason for living, their meaning in life. Now, I'm not saying that making money has no meaning. However, what is important is the way you take meaning in your life and apply meaning in your everyday experience. In this town, actually one block from where we've previously lived, now resides a very, very famous musician. If I told you his name and the group he was in, everybody would go, "Oh, wow. Fantastically famous all over the world. At one point considered to be one of the top groups in the whole world." Now he is old. He's living in a very humble house. What happened to all that money? What happened to all that position? And the meaning of what was happening? Let's talk about it from the musical point of view for a second, because I have experience with that. I have my own personal experience with that and can thus speak from direct experience. Usually those who get into music have two things. Number one, they have some capacity for it. They have some artistic interest in it. They like to create it. And number two, they see stars and they want to emulate the stars. They want to do things like the stars did them and become famous and powerful like stars. So their artistic desires motivate and drive their creation of their art form, and they're emulating, they're following the lives of some others who've become famous and successful, drives their enthusiasm to continue this until they too become famous and successful. Now, you have there immediately a contradiction. You have the artistic creative capacity now being driven by trying to be someone else, by trying to be like someone else, by trying to emulate someone else's success, someone else's path. So you have immediately a divergence. In the beginning, the divergence may not be so great, because when one is young, one is also idealistic. But as one grows, the divergence increases. The divergence between one's artistic feeling and one's necessity and desire and motivation to make money, be famous, and continue. When this divergence starts to become great, the question of meaning in life starts to arise very seriously. You know, when you're about 17, 18, 19, you have a very serious crisis in your life of self-identity. How do you identify yourself? What do you want to be when you grow up? How do you find meaning in your life? And you realize you can't just get the answer from someone else. You just can't understand the answer by thinking. So you go out and you start acting. You start doing something. And through struggle and figuring out what works and what doesn't work, you gradually get to some point, I mean, if you're successful at it, where you start to earn enough money, you start to earn a lot of money, you start to become successful, and things become clear as to what you should do in life. So this continues for some time, up and it increases, it gets better, up until about 40 years of age. At that time, you have what's called a midlife crisis, where all of these things that you accepted are put into question, are thrown into doubt, and no longer is it so clear. And many things, interesting things, can happen at that time. People change jobs. People change careers. They even change families. They even change their places of residence. They change countries. They do all kinds of things. They question everything about what their existence is. So they start in another way, they move their way through, they find their way again, and they start making another kind of success in their life, if they do make success, and they think they have it under control again. And then, later in life, they look back and they say, what have I done? Sometimes people are on their deathbeds and they think, I have wasted my life. I have not done what I wanted to do. I have not followed my dreams. I have sold out to another's conception of me. And when they die, they go off into the next realm, the realm between lives, and they are asked to examine the major elements in their lives and see how they feel about the directions their lives took and the way in which they can actually do it better in the future, or how they can better understand it. And their guides and those who want to help them always bring them to the point of having to examine, why was it you deviated from doing what you felt you should do or had to do in your life? Obviously, this does not happen with everybody, but similar elements are faced by everybody, especially during these stages when doubt and crisis comes as to who we are, what is the purpose of our lives, what is the meaning of life itself. Now, the point that I'm making here is that everybody goes through the process of trying to understand meaning in their lives. The difference is that everybody reacts to that process uniquely. Some people can't accept the challenge of finding meaning in their lives. For various reasons, they have not had the strength developed within them in their childhood, or they had no impetus or motivation to do so. So they take shelter, for instance, in drugs or in alcohol, or in addictions of other kinds, to forget or to block out the need or the requirement of meaning, of finding that meaning in their lives. And those of us who haven't had such problems should not feel very righteous about ourselves in relationship to these persons, because there are circumstances in their lives that, if we were in the same circumstance, would probably affect us in a very similar way. Let me give you an example. Let's say your father died when you were 3. Your mother was having to work by having 2 or 3 jobs. You never saw her. Your health was horrible. You lived in a very poor and underprivileged neighborhood. There was a lot of violence and crime. You didn't get a very good education. You had to go to work early to maintain the family. Your family was filled with alcoholics and other problematic personalities. If you were faced with such circumstances in your life, you would also have a very hard time to find your way, to find meaning, because your life would be a kind of putting weights on your shoulder from your very birth, and you would have a very hard time to find any reason to find your way in a very successful, prosperous manner. Yet there are many, many examples of persons in such circumstances and situations who looked within themselves and said, I'm not going to be a victim of my circumstances. I'm going to climb out of this hole that I am in and still succeed despite what the material energy has dealt to me in my birth. What really counts here, the real motivating, the real essential factor, is to have respect for yourself. Having respect for yourself means to respect your integrity as a person, to respect your capacities to do good or be good, to respect others in your life because you respect yourselves, and to respect the path that you take. And when you have that self-respect, even if you haven't yet caught the essence of your particular way through life, you've got all the capacity to do so. What I have been trying to do in our communications in these times when we associate through the broadcasting or through forums or whatever way, is to get everybody to the state where they have self-respect and confidence, and where they understand how to connect to their essence, which is filled with spiritual goodness, that you have the capacity to make your life a great success according to your definitions of success. After all, if you think about the last moment of your life, if you were to be looking back on your life, or to be looking back on your life from the time after death, the real definition of success is if you can look back and feel satisfied that you have done all you could do in the best way you could have done it. Now, this is a very different definition of success than the definition of selling millions of records, or making lots of money, or becoming very famous, or becoming very powerful, and so on. Or being so beautiful that others drool on you when you walk down the street. Or being so knowledgeable that everyone is in awe of what you can understand. For these things in and of themselves are not success. These things are just things. The success is when you feel enlivened by what you have done and what you are, and satisfied that you have actually accomplished what you could have in the best way you could have done it. Success is a personal thing that only you can define in your circumstance according to your parameters, your rules, your ways of understanding yourself. Maybe your tests for yourself are totally different than what others might consider as important. But it doesn't matter what others think are important for you. What matters is what you think is important for you. So now, your business in life is to understand what is important for you, and what is the way you will endeavor to find that importance in your practical actions. In my life, as I explained in the beginning, maybe somebody's wondering, that seemed to be a very disconnected explanation, but I was just coming back to that point. What I find is important, I've already explained, but the way I try to manifest that is simply to be guided by the energy of the divine. I would not know personally what is the best way to help others. After all, there are so many people, there are so many circumstances I'll never possibly know, and even more importantly, there are cosmic situations developing which I could work against if I did what I thought was best out of ignorance. You know, there are arrangements going on in the universe. We may not know them in detail. We may not even know them generally, but we have a feeling that there is a direction that is taking everything in a particular way. There's a cosmic direction going on, and that we know when we're moving with it in a nice way because we feel very enlivened. The flow is capturing us. So we should just simply try to move in that direction. But how can you do it when you don't see it? I do it by asking for divine guidance, and always including in that divine guidance that if I'm doing it wrong, I want it to be stopped. I know that I can't possibly know everything about everywhere that's going on. I can only know basically what's in front of me. And even that I don't know so well, because there's so many other factors. So I see when I'm bumping up against walls all the time, maybe this is not what I should be doing. But that doesn't necessarily mean I should give up either. Maybe I should just adjust what I'm doing. Let's say you want to bash through a wall and you're bashing, and it's simply going dank, because you're hitting a steel beam behind. You can either say, oh, I'm not meant to go through this wall, or just move over, for example, your chisel and bank, go through the place where there isn't a steel beam behind and be successful. Sometimes people say, oh, I can't succeed, I should just give up, instead of thinking, well, maybe I should think of it in another way. Maybe I should see it in another way. If you remember when we spoke about the angels and the angel guidance and our guides and all of these discussions we had in the past weeks, which, by the way, I've gotten very nice feedback about, you will see that they can manifest directions to us in a great variety of ways. They can manifest as a person coming to assist us. They can manifest as a circumstance which was unexpected to change our direction. They can manifest as a facility which all of a sudden appears. All of these different unexpected things which can appear before us are connected with those who wish to help us. And therefore, when we pray for that guidance, when we pray for that assistance, when we just open ourselves to that energy, wonderful things can start to happen. So if one tries to accept that, if one tries to accept this energy by simply becoming receptive to it, one can accept all kinds of guidance, get all kinds of connections. For example, when we had these meditations, they're also there on the website, how to connect to the deities. You do it by just accepting their energy. You do connections to angels by accepting their energy, guides accepting their energy. And yet, if you simply say, please guide me to the deities or to Radha and Krishna or to your guides or to angels, ask for that guidance. And as you're asking, you just accept their connection and energy, they will guide you. So, what happens when you accept this guidance? When you accept this guidance from others who are there ready to help you, your whole life develops a new aspect to it. Your whole life develops another form of motivating power. In other words, your life is now assisted. You have help. You have assistance to do what you need to do in your life. You get a very clear, a very obvious feedback from these divine beings. Things start happening which never happened, but which are now created directly by the energies of the universe. Now one may say, okay, here we are making a discussion about not having our lives directed by others, by not having our lives specifically pushed in a particular direction by others. And now here you have all these divine beings completely taking over my life and guiding it in a particular way. But there is a big difference between these two ways of seeing it. For example, if I become a musician, a rock star, if I want to get involved in all that kind of stuff in order to live somebody else's dream of becoming great and making money and thinking this is my way to happiness, this is definitely disconnected from my essence. If I ask for guidance and I also ask for guidance to not do the wrong things, which to prevent me from doing the wrong things, what do you think will be the guiding factor in the decisions the divine beings make to guide me? What do you think would be their motivation? The motivation of the music producer is very simple, to maximize his profit. Otherwise, he wouldn't do it. But those who are in the divine energetic realms, they don't have any motivations like that. Angels don't have motivations like that. They have no self-interest. Your guides have no self-interests. Radha Krishna has no self-interest other than your interest, because you and they are of the same energy. You are of the same quality. You are of the same personality. You are all part of them. How could their interests be separate from your interests? When you ask for their guidance, they're going to guide you according to what is the perfect way to manifest optimally your personal development and evolution. It's perfectly in their interests that you shall become the greatest being that you can be, because you are their part. And as their part, how could they want their part to do something improper just for their benefit? It wouldn't work. The point is actually obvious. When you totally take shelter in the guiding force of the divine energy, you will get the perfect feedback to everything you are doing. You will get that feedback. You will get that immediate response to the directions of your life, and you will see it face to face. You will see it directly coming to you in an experiential way. The question is, either you can live your life according to someone else's dictation, someone else who's going to use you for their own profit. You can live your life in ignorance without any understanding of what to do because you just can't handle your life. Or you can live your life under divine guidance. If you live your life under divine guidance, your life will be the perfect manifestation of all that you can possibly be and all that you desired to be before you came into this lifetime. Part of living your life is living your life also according to that plan or that intention you had when you plan to take birth in the particular way you did. The idea that you're taking birth in a particular way is simply the sum total of your good and bad karma, as if it was some kind of computerized formula which spit out a body and a circumstance without any higher purpose to it, is actually of the mode of ignorance. Everybody's life begins with the intention that we put into it before we decided or accepted to take birth in this lifetime. Now, whether or not we fulfilled that intention, that is what we will look back upon at the time of our death and which will give us satisfaction or not. Messiah, we lost you completely. Can you repeat that? The question is that, are you aware of the intention upon which your whole life was to be formulated? Are you aware of that intention? If you are aware of that intention, then you can, with completely aware consciousness, find your way through life with the proper motivation and with the clear vision of the directions you should take. If you are not fully aware of your intention in this lifetime, and you don't have a clarity of purpose like this, then accepting fully the energy of the beings of the higher realms, the divine beings, and accepting their guidance, and accepting their keeping you in the right direction, is the absolute best thing to do. So this theme of motivating our lives is something which connects between the previous lifetime, the time in between our lives, when the greatest decisions of all that affect the way our lives will take place happen, and the time again in between the lives when we look back and we judge on how we have done in that life. So ultimately, the real important factor, the main essential important factor of our lives as a motivating factor, is how close we are to the intention we have given this life. How close are we to fulfilling that intention? How much in contact are we? Yet within that lifetime, the experiences we have are those factors which give us the life experience, give us the feeling of being alive, give us the contact with our own existence. It's the intention which fuels the experiences, yet it's the experiences themselves which give us that enlivening feeling that makes us feel vibrant. And finding your way through the connections to Radha and Krishna are without a doubt the safest, securest, and surest way to stay in contact with your life's intention. If you think about it, this is such a respectful way to live life, because it's not that the higher beings are dictating to you what you should do or how you should do it. They're not giving you their idea of you. They are assisting you to fulfill your idea of you, your intention of you that you created even before this birth. This is not a demand. This is not a forceful thing. Rather, this is what they assist you to do. You're the one who's doing it. Your integrity is completely maintained at all times. The idea that you're going to burn in hell if you don't do what God wants, the idea of divine retribution, the idea of suffering because of being bad or whatever, these ideals are not what motivates God. The real suffering will only be when you do not fulfill what you are, what you can be, when you do not come in contact with your own intention in your life. This is the real essence of the continuation of life. Just to fulfill your personal mission and no one else's. Krishna did say in Bhagavad Gita, perform your own duties, for to perish in the performance of another's duties is dangerous. Seen from a very shallow point of view, one could say, well, that means I should, like Arjuna, should work in the army and I shouldn't be a sudra. But actually, Krishna doesn't say shallow things. It means to follow with integrity what your mission in life is in all respects, and not to try to live somebody else's life. Because if you live somebody else's life, that doesn't give you anything except a very big pain at the time when you realize it. Here's another way to look at it. What if you were told you have only a month to live? What would you do in that month? Would you make money? Would you try to become a star? Would you do any kind of endeavor to become great? I really doubt that, because you would say, what's the point? Most likely, you will find out those people you love. You will tell them you love them. You will show them your love. You will try to just experience that love to the greatest degree and try to do something good to assist them in their lives without you. Because these things are the things of importance. These things are the things of value. You will connect with the higher energies and connect with it so that your transition will be compatible with your essence, so that you will just transmit, transit this life into the next dimension with complete compatibility. You will understand very clearly mistakes you have made, people you have hurt, things you have done which wasted your time, things which are totally irrelevant in your life. And if you suddenly became cured, you might transform the whole direction of your life according to the realizations you made in that one significant month. Therefore, this theme of finding your way, living your life, being yourself, being true to yourself above all things, actually connects with the essence of what we are as living beings. And we can find help from these divine beings, from other persons who are sent to us, inspired by divine beings, by things we see, by things we experience. These stimuluses around us can give us a very clear direction in our lives and assist us to really manifest who we are and what we are. Therefore, I recommend that we concentrate our consciousness, our awareness, on contacting our own way of finding ourselves, the connection to the Supreme, and so on. We can take help from wherever we want, but ultimately we have to take responsibility as the architect of our fate. So I think that we have covered this topic quite completely. And I'd like to take a little break until, let's say, 35 minutes after the hour, which is approximately 14 minutes from now. And then we can come back with questions. So please have your questions ready. You can instant message me all your questions. And after that, we can do another meditation along the lines and according to the theme of the meditations we have done in the last 3 weeks, which will be to ask for guidance. Our meditation would be to ask for guidance in our lives and to connect with those who give us guidance. So I'll play some music and we can all take a break. We're on the air. Maybe they'll play us a little music a little later if he can figure out how to mix it into the TACOMF, which is not easy unless you have a digital mixer and you know how to do routing. But anyway, I have a few questions here. The first is from Argentina. And it's an interesting question because I'm sure many people share this question. It's a very long thing, so I'm just basically going to paraphrase it. What they're asking is that they think that they have changed the intention of their life because of meeting people in their life who have transformed what it is they want in their life. In other words, their intention before they were born has somehow been transformed by people that they are meeting in their life. Or put in another way, they meet people or they meet situations which make them see things from a new point of view and which therefore make them understand that there's more to life than what they thought before. And then the doubt would be, the doubt is whether this means that the intention that was there at the time of before birth has been transformed or not. Is there a possibility that we can transform that intention? Okay, I'm going to start answering this question by stating the obvious, and that's not going to be the end of my question. I'm going to get more into what actually is being asked here. Stating the obvious, the intention that you had before you took birth, you cannot change or transform after you take birth, because after all, it is the intention that you had then. That's a historical thing that cannot be changed or transformed. That is what it is. Now, you might think that you have changed your intention in this lifetime, and that means the choice you have made in this lifetime has more weight, is more important, is more significant than the intention you had in the in-between time when you were to take birth. Obviously, you can have different intentions during this life than you had when you intended to accomplish something before you took birth, obviously. But whether these new intentions are superior or better for you than the one that was developed as the theme of your life is highly unlikely. Don't forget that in this period between lives, you are in a very lucid state, a very clear state, a state not bound by the influences of the conditions around you, as you are now. Then, in that in-between state, when you develop the intention and purpose of this life, you are surrounded by guides, by superior personalities who understand, because of their greater evolution, the situation that you are in, and help by giving you illumination around that situation. So it is highly unlikely, if not perhaps impossible, that what you are understanding now is clearer or more aware or has greater help than you did then. So let's look at it like this. Let's say you had an intention, and that intention you are fulfilling in this lifetime, but you're just not aware of it. Let's say part of that intention was to meet new people, to expand your horizons. Part of that intention was to be exposed to new experiences you didn't expect. Part of your intention was to expand because you have a tendency not to want to do it, so things come to you rather than you reaching out for them. But generally, I would say it is highly, highly unlikely that in our present state, you would be able to see things clearer than you can see them in that in-between state. He's asking me to say it again, but I have no idea what he's talking about. I just said it. Last sentence. I don't even remember what my last sentence was. So how can I repeat it? Okay. The next question is, interesting from the point of view that I've heard this question before. It's from the Moscow group, and I've heard this before from the Moscow group. Whoever's writing this question, because it's anonymous, is always grappling with the Kamala Muller Moscow group, is grappling, not that he wrote it, but somebody there, is grappling with the question of what is devotional service? What is service in general? What is service to God? What does it mean, service to God? And sure, if you accept the way it has been phrased, if you accept the label that is put on it, certainly it becomes bewildering according to what we have discussed. It doesn't make sense. But let's look at it in another way. Let's look at this concept of devotional service by examining what the elements of it actually are. If you just think of, for example, hearing and chanting and remembering and serving and all these things, what are these things? Does God actually need these things? Does God require them to advance, to evolve, to feel comfortable, to feel satisfied? Obviously not. But at the same time, These things are encouraged. Why? Because when we do these things, spiritual things, whatever they may be, I don't want to put them in any particular package. When we do spiritual things which help our evolution and we feel satisfied, happy, and evolving in life, then we get the benefit. So we, who are this part of the whole, start to become more and more complete. That serves God. Understand? God is so wonderful that God feels served when we become perfected, when we become evolved, when we become the best we can be, like such a perfect parent. So God has no selfish interests in being served by us. Therefore, when we do this evolutionary process, we are serving God in the same way as actually has been stated under that misleading term of devotional service. Now, when I say the term is misleading, I don't mean that it was purposefully created to be misleading, that it's some plot to mislead us. I don't mean anything like that. I mean to say that it fits within this conception that we are very small, God is very great, we are meant to serve God like the serf serves the king, like the slave serves the master. You give things to the master, and this way you develop. And that we should not enjoy anything, we should have no pleasure, nothing should be for us, everything should be for God, and that is perfection. This is misleading. For when we perform bhakti, bhakti is a form of a yogic discipline. Bhakti doesn't mean devotional service, although devotional service, these English terms, we're trying to refer to bhakti. Yoga means to connect. Bhakti yoga means to connect with the Supreme, with love, to actually feel a loving relationship, to actually relate and connect in love with the Supreme. And that includes all of the normal and expected relationships of love, which includes the exchanges, which includes the sharing, which includes the helping and giving of gifts and everything that goes both ways, not one way. And in this way, as we develop, as we follow our intention, as we become satisfied as living beings, and as we learn how to connect with the guidance of the Supreme and share in that exchange of energy, we are doing bhakti. We are engaged in bhakti. That is why I have tried in this discussion to bring us in that connection to the Supreme, to help formulate the discipline of bhakti in another way. Not that it's something new or different. It's just rather more realistic about the way it's actually happening. I mean, the connection is actually happening. Because the connection depends upon having the connection between you and the Supreme. Without that connection, we're not really talking about bhakti yoga. We're talking about something else. Yet that does not mean that the connections we have to others are separate from that. Connections to our angels, connections to our guides, connections to those who have already departed, connections to other people, connections to any living being in this world, does not necessarily mean it's outside of this. Life is a package deal. It's not something you can divide into one activity that has relevance and all the rest don't have relevance. It's a package deal. It's not that you can be good in one place and bad in another and the good will overcome it. It's a silly example. The idea, it's a package deal. It's all taken together. Package. You know? When you have this package, what it is that you are displaying your love, that is what you are sharing with the Supreme, because you are actually one with the Supreme, right? You are sharing that love, And when you give that quality of love to others in your interactions, in whatever way you do it, you are sharing that love. It is not separate. God is not separate from his creation or her creation. Their creation and they are not separate. When we start understanding that, we develop. It's a question of expanding your awareness to the platform within which you can accommodate God's creation instead of blacking it out or blocking it out from your vision. This is directly related to the theme of love versus fear, the basic fundamental dichotomy. Those who love want to accommodate all of God's creation within their lives. Those who fear want to separate, want to block out, want to protect themselves from various aspects of God's creation in their lives. Out of fear, some people say, I trust no one but God because everybody else will cheat me. Some people have said, I only trust Guru because everyone else will cheat me. Some have concluded, you can't trust anybody, only trust yourself. These different statements are born out of bad experiences and thus fear of repeating the bad experiences. They are defense mechanisms. I don't accept any angels or anything. I mean, even if there were angels, maybe there'd be bad ones who will start making me do bad things. But if there's an energy that comes to you that makes you do a bad thing, it's only because you wanted to do that bad thing. It happened to be something that you felt some kind of affinity for, which made you feel there was a reason to do it. Not that there's some force out there which is moving your arms and your hands like you're a zombie to go out and do evil. Out of fear, people don't want to have connection with angels. Out of fear, people wouldn't want to have connection with their guides. Out of fear, they don't want to accept the assistance of other people. Out of fear, they don't even want to know how they feel themselves. Out of fear, they're deathly afraid of their own feelings. And out of love, one accepts all of the creation of God in its all of its greatness, accepts it, accepts help in whatever way it comes. And yet, has such great respect for oneself, knows that when something comes which is not what I would accept, not what I want, not that I feel right for, I just don't accept it as something for me, although it's still within the arrangement of God. I accept cows. I like cows, but I'm not going to go out in my backyard and eat grass. I may accept something. That doesn't mean I follow it. That doesn't mean I do what it does. I accept it and I deal with it as it is. So why should I be afraid? I mean, of the accepting. Anyway, this is it's a very subtle difference. It's a very subtle difference in the way you see this whole concept of what we are, what God is, and what relationship is, and the words you use to define it. For example, just this word devotional service, it can screw your head around backwards if you define it in a way which is limiting your activities rather than expanding, as we explained. I mean, I don't want to go through the whole explanation again. Also, you can misunderstand the meaning of the word surrender. You can misunderstand the meaning of take shelter. You can misunderstand the meaning of follow. You can misunderstand all these meanings if you put them in that kind of a context and take them out of that kind of a context, they have new meaning. I choose to accept the meaning that these are all different aspects of guidance and help which are available to help me evolve, help me understand what is truly my meaning in my life. And the more I can find meaning in my life, the more I can find purpose in my life, the more I can be of service to anyone else in theirs. So these are all questions which we can deal with when we redefine terms with meaning that makes sense to us, not meanings which have been given to us by others who have a particular way of thinking about it. Hang on, I lost them in the other Moscow. Sambatika, come back. The next question is, if I say that one should feel or one should learn what about one's destination by asking Radha and Krishna for guidance or asking the higher beings for guidance, but if one doesn't understand what they say, how do you recognize their answer? And the next implication would be, should we freely go after our own desires? But I think that's that question is based on a misunderstanding of what has been discussed. We are not requesting Radha and Krishna to give us verbal guidance. It's not like we're saying, guide us, and then we're going to listen. And then here, go down the street and turn a left. That wasn't the point. Because guidance can be in a variety of ways. First of all, guidance to stop you from going in the right way. Blocking options that you thought you had, but really aren't there. Or, let's say, by having others come to you and giving you better advice. Or maybe just getting a feeling that you're doing the wrong thing. Or maybe by just getting inspired to do another thing. This is guidance. Maybe even a person comes and changes your whole life, the whole course of your life, unexpectedly. This is also the way guidance, divine guidance, can manifest. Therefore, should we freely go after our desires? Hey, that is a disconnected question. That's totally different. That's not connected to the two things. It depends, you know, if you have the right intention to do things. If you feel you should do something, go for it. But if you doubt and you're asking for guidance, be sensitive to the way in which you are experiencing those things you are doing. Now I've got a question which is a huge monster question just popped up here. And I'm wondering whether that should not be a lecture topic or maybe I should talk about it. It's the relation between karma and the destination we choose in between lives. Now, I have to define what actually karma is to answer that. Okay, I'll try it in a short way. I don't see karma as something which is accumulated in terms of some cosmic police, or not even police, cosmic judgment, which is just given to you as a judgment in which you have to swallow being forced to by this judging authority, by these persons out there who force you to suffer all the bad things you've done. But rather, as a series of events that have led to certain specific consequences, which we have to deal with in the future. You don't have a terminology which refers specifically to law of karma. This is another one of those definitions which misguide our conception of what we are dealing with. It's not law in the sense there's a police force, there's a judgment, there's a jail, there are hells. Just like in the, when you speak about karma yoga, you're talking about work. In other words, using work to evolve. So karma, not using that as the proof, but that's a description. Karma itself refers to actions, work, activity. And this work, this activity, these actions create consequences. They create paths due to the choices we make, because the actions we make are dependent on the choices we make. So the choices we make and the actions we make create a series of events which play themselves out. That's just simply the law of cause and effect, which means that I do something, something is a reaction to it. This is just nature. If I say something, you think a certain way. If I say a bunch of things, you feel a certain way. If I push the glass moves. This is a series of consequences. And these consequences can lead us into very strange places, can lead us into very good places. It depends on the choices we make. But these choices we are making are not just choices we make today or we have made in this lifetime. It's the choices we have made throughout our entire existence. The choices I make with the awareness and consciousness I have are majority of extent a product of everything that has taken place in the past. Yet, because I am not the product of my past, I am something different, the spirit being, I always have some freedom to act outside of my own mold that I have created. If that was not possible, there'd be no free will. If there would be no free will, somebody else would be controlling everything, and then life would just be one big machine. But life is not a machine. Life is living. Machines are dead. Now, when I am in my in-between live stage, I am not under the influence, or I am not bound by any of the choices, or even any of the evolutionary activities I have performed. I am above them. I see them. I observe them. I am aware of them. I understand the implications of them. Yet, I know I have further to go. I know I have to deal with life. I know that I am being drawn to my own development, just as my body organically has to grow. And it's not like when I'm 5 years old, unless I'm Sanaka Kumar, I can't say no more growth. So because of this constant flow of spiritual energy to development, to evolution, to growth, in that in-between time, my purpose is to find the best way to deal with what I was, what my consciousness is stuck at, how I can evolve, how I can learn, how I can see, how I can experience and expand in the next lifetime. And if I have, for example, just give an example. Let's say in my previous lifetime, or somebody's previous lifetime, I don't want to put my, because then I have to take responsibility for what I'm going to say, and I'm just talking a vague theoretical example. Let's say a person was engaged in their previous lifetime in harming women, beating women, and being very angry at women and thinking they were so insignificant and so foolish and so on. Then they go to the in-between time and they say, oh my God, what have I done? So then with the guides, they understand that, yes, for you to actually learn, for you to actually experience what it meant for those who you harmed, and for you to overcome this desire in you, best thing would be to take birth as a woman with a husband who acts towards you in a similar way, and to be surrounded by the situation so that you can be cured from this insidious disease to cause others trouble. Now, you can always say, no, I don't want to do that. That's too heavy. I can't do that. I don't feel like doing that. Or you can say, yes, I understand. I understand this need. And then you can accept that. In those realms, there's no force. Yet, there is the incredible power of awareness. You see, that's not force, but it's a power. It's not force in that you have to do it, but it's a power in that, obviously, you have to do it. There's a difference. Now I have another question here. Can we say that all hells or forms of suffering are the pure concoction of politically and economically minded religious authorities? Man, what a group we have here. You people don't let up the pressure, do you? On me, the poor answerer of questions. Let's divide this question up to make life easier for me. Hells and all of these, lightning bolts that come down and burn you to ashes because you're such bad people. These are definitely concoctions of a human mind. The human mind creates all of this because the human mind feels so guilty. The human mind insists there must be punishment for this. The human mind can't comprehend cosmic universal love that accommodates your imperfection. So because the human mind cannot accommodate such universal love, the human mind insists that it's a given, it's a fundamental truth, it's obvious that we're going to burn in various forms of hell because we deserve it. And why? Because if I was God, I would burn you in hell, because that's the way I think. Because if I did all the things that I do, I would make me burn in hell, so you should burn in hell too, and we should all burn in hell unless we're perfect angels, when we can go to heaven with our wings and float around up there or whatever. So we are quite expert at creating these hells because we feel that these hells indeed should be created. And similarly, we take our conceptions and we develop theologies based on these conceptions. And later on, those who are politically minded and economically exploitative realize that these wonderful human conceptions are the perfect way to keep everybody under the control of the authorities for the benefit of the church or the temple or the persons in charge. Therefore, you can't say that these things are the concoction of motivated people, but you can say that human beings are motivated to create such concoctions, and some of those human beings find it very advantageous to take advantage of the concoctions. So I'd like to stop there because I don't have any more questions popping up in front of me, and I'm not going to take any more anyway. And I would like to do that meditation together with all of you. And as I've stated before, the purpose of that meditation is to have connection with, contact with our angels, our guides, Radha and Krishna, or Lord Chaitanya, or your worshipful deities, or God, or anyone that you wish to contact, and to feel their connection, and then to ask them to guide us, to ask them to keep us from deviating from our path, from deviating from that which would help us evolve the best. We're not going to ask them to make us suffer. We're not going to ask them to punish us. We're not going to ask them to make sure we don't enjoy anything. We're not going to ask them to do this kind of thing. We're simply going to ask them to guide us in the best direction for us. Wishing you all love and prosperity, peace, and connections. Many, many, many connections of divine guidance.